Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello and welcome back to the latest pod, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Shackle, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. And Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rented sector. In fact, actually, this time, I think it would apply to any industry at all. In this episode, we're going to explore the area of inspiring and retaining brilliant people. It's an area that I'm particularly passionate about because our business, like many others in our sector, relies on its people to deliver an exceptional service. At the Lettings Hub, we now have more than 100 people and growing, it seems, week on week. So this is also an area that is really important to our business, even more so as we get bigger. So let's get started. And today I'm joined by my long-term business friend, Andrew Porteous from Ethic Eyes. Andrew, please introduce yourself and share the passion behind your business.
Thank you, Heidi, and thank you for inviting me onto this. It's my first one, so be gentle. I'll just give a potted sort of history of my career. I started out after university, didn't know what I wanted to do, started out in an engineering organisation and doing sort of documentation, marketing type roles. And that lasted for 11 years in various roles. And that, as an example of a company that retained and motivated its people, is one I'm going to keep coming back to. Because even though that was late 80s, early 90s, they did a lot of stuff right. I then moved via an MBA at Henley Management College. I moved into a consultancy that dealt with change, people development. It also had a recruitment arm, so I've got quite an insight into sort of employee life cycle, getting them, keeping them, developing them. And then 18 years ago, I checked before this, so I started my own business, and that's what I've been doing ever since. Mostly around leadership development, senior level team development, and I've also got a real passion for ethics. Teamed up with a really genius professor. If you haven't got the smarts, team up with somebody who has, I always say. And Chris Cowton, head of research at the European Institute of Business Ethics, we developed a model, which is almost like all the good things you should see in an ethically resilient culture. So I hooked up with
them. Is that where the company name came from?
That's where Ethic Eyes comes from, yeah, keeping eyes on the ethics of organisations.
Our history goes back many, many years. Not only, as I mentioned, Andrew's been a long-term business friend of our business, he has supported me in many businesses before and reminding me of some of the things that we don't naturally see as leaders sometimes, and it's a really good reminder. And it was important for us today to record this podcast because last week with Josh, we talked all about recruitment and how it was really important to bring great new people into a company. But as we were talking about it, we couldn't help but touch on the fact that it's probably more important to try and absolutely retain the absolute best that you have, so you're not in that kind of recruitment cycle all the time, unless you're in a growing state.
Totally, yeah. You don't want the leaky bucket syndrome.
Yeah. So we obviously want your insight today and all your expertise. And so let's start by discussing what strategies do you think are the most effective then in motivating and retaining employees? And I suppose what then comes into it for me, I'm a big believer of culture, but how important really is the culture to make this work?
I mean, most research will show you that relationship with the line manager is the most important thing around retention. And the company spent a lot of money doing lots of other things. If I whiz through my career, I remember the great managers I worked for. Yep. I don't remember my pay and benefits. I remember the people who listened to me, and understood what I wanted. There's a lot of stuff out there about retaining employees, and it tends to be, I wouldn't say bland, that's not fair, but it's almost one size fits all. And there was a term that came, I think, in probably the 90s called, sounds very pretentious, which is obviously me, but employee centricity. So your approach to retaining people should be centered on that employee's needs. Now, if you think about what that demands, you need managers who really understand their employees. So, you know, what do people want? Well, people at one level want money, obviously. And this is all based on, you know, why research by credible organizations. I think they want to enjoy what they do. They want to feel they're achieving something. There's a big thrust in recent generations around development. You know, they want to see, you know, what's in it for me, really, if I do this, what can happen? Where can I go? There's definitely something around being part of a team and enjoying being part of that team, being part of something larger. You mentioned earlier about culture and values. There's definitely something around values. When people exit swiftly, often it's because the organization has done something that has countered their own values. So shared values, one is fairness. I'll jump around a bit, but if you're keeping on people who aren't performing, for example, that is unfair to other members of the team. And that could encourage somebody to leave. Thinking about changing the way that people can progress. So often, and I'm sure you've seen this, I've seen it in lots of organizations, people will be excellent at what they do, and then the only move they have is to start managing people.
Yeah.
As a team leader or a manager. And if you think about the competencies, which I've got quite a passion for as well, involved, they're different. And some people don't want to do it. So you take somebody who's a top performer, and either they don't step up and manage people, so they're in it rather than on it, or they do it badly. So they need, I think organizations need to think about, if they are thinking about career paths for individuals, then there has to be reward and progression without actually having to manage people. Because you think about the impact of that on the team as well as on the individual. Final point, I think, is we think about terms and conditions, we think about benefits, etc. But there's this thing called the psychological contract, which you may have heard of. And that is around, the unwritten connection between an individual and an employee. And when that works, it's really what I call sticky in a good way. You know, people will want to hang around. When it doesn't work, people will tend to leave. I'd love to be able to summarize that. Maybe you can.
One of the things that you mentioned there, there's a few things that you said that kind of triggered something with me, is making people understand when they've achieved something. And I think that comes down to them personally, but also their business or their team that they're involved in. How would you suggest businesses, I suppose, articulate the leader's vision, if that's the right word, at the top, all the way down to everybody throughout that business, to make sure that they all know how their part to play, maybe?
No, exactly that. It's really important that because vision, I think, and I've been to business school, I think it's overused and it can be a very ethereal thing. Now, I think a vision, it's clues in the word really, it's just a future view, okay? And it can be 6 months, it could be 3 months, it could be 12 months. I think there's an art to it, because if you're really passionate about your business, your vision could be too personal to you, and then people won't engage with it, yeah? So I think it's setting that future direction, and then more about getting people to think about, okay, if we achieve this, what is in that, what's in it for you? You know, so when we are double the size, when we're making, double the profit, when we've got even more satisfied customers, what does that actually mean to you? So your then theory would be getting people to create their own vision in support of your vision.
And I suppose then doing their own check every day, every week, especially in one-to-one kind of type conversations, where it kind of goes all the way down to them, where they're kind of near enough doing the check and balance themselves on their contribution.
Yeah, and managers or team leaders who facilitate that. I mean, I could have a good, when I think about my career, I shorten the introduction because I've got enough time because I'm quite old. But I remember the managers. I remember a guy called Colin Forsyth, who was my first ever manager. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He walked the talk. He worked hard. He knew I loved playing football. So even if we're up against the deadline, we used to work all nighters to get documents to hit bid deadlines. He would say, well, don't forget, you've got football training, Andrew, 7 till 9. So I'd go off, do my football training, come back. He cared. Another guy was a really kind, nice guy who just sort of mentored me, really, rather than managed me. He was the managing director, actually, of the business. And he was just a nice, thoughtful guy. And he gave me time. And that's what he had very little of.
Yeah.
Then another guy who was, again, equally supportive, used to let me sleep under my desk when I had my first child. I think my record was 6 hours.
Oh, wow.
I was woken up by a cleaner vacuuming. but he understood that I was, that's what I needed. And then I've had other types of managers who are, one was really challenging, really intellectual guy, but he really challenged me to own my own career, which was a massive step for me. And the final one, and this is probably things we may be addressing earlier, was a guy who actually connected me with people because he knew I'd peaked in that organization. There was nowhere else for me to go, really. And he connected me with people who eventually offered me a job. So, you know, so he was really, it wasn't in his interest to do that, but he did it because he knew it was right for me. So I've had some great managers, and it comes back to managers. Managers often translate the vision to their people.
So just going back to age, and I'm actually younger than you by a bit.
Most people are, actually, Heidi, these days.
Fair bit.
Most people are.
But I even find myself talking these days in terms of the younger generation. And I think in the letting space and in our industry, you know, as a business, we're very diverse, actually. We employ people of all ages, etc. But we do have a predominantly younger workforce in, let's say, our operational teams. And you mentioned something again earlier where people are more impatient now. And I don't know if that comes from the fact that, you know, maybe when we were starting out in a career, we were, you know, we had the sights on a house, you know, where we were going to save for a deposit. And for that, for some people right now, that just seems so impossible, if ever. And obviously we've got you get a £2,000 mobile phone given to you by signing up to a contract. Everything you can have is pretty much instant. How do we support those people? And how do we manage those people? Because sometimes their expectation sometimes takes me aback a little bit in terms of what they expect from a company without really giving too much in return.
There is a risk I perceive at the moment, and it's linked around, you know, high levels of or low levels of unemployment. People, you know, desperate to keep hold of people, desperate to attract people. And I think you can go too far. So the psychological contract should be, you know, this is what we expect of you, but you can expect this of us. The instant gratification thing, which is actually a test they do on kids that my son failed, where they put food in front of them and say you could have two chocolate buttons now or a packet in 10 minutes. He was only little. He went, he ate the two and then was sort of stropping until he got the packet sort of thing. So, but I think we can generalize a lot because there are many people who aren't like that. And all the research out there always check the sources, always how broad was this research about what Gen X wants or millennials want or whatever, because often it's tiny sample groups, not necessarily rigorous. I think there's definitely something about some high levels of expectation, and certainly some of my other clients are really struggling with people who are sort of expect the next promotion without having delivered in the role. So I think there is that shared commitment. There's something about, well, this is where you need to get to. Be very clear. There's a phrase I love, which is to be clear is kind. A lot of people think treating people well and, you know, being a supportive manager is all, but you need to be clear with people. So you need to achieve this. Then you can even get this out in the interview process if you're not overwhelmed by desperation to have people. You say, this is what we expect, and you do this and you hit these targets, then this is what's next for you.
So just thinking about that then, obviously, one of the messages I think that's really important is, you know, keep talking to people. Let's keep talking. Let's understand how people feel. Like, there's so many situations in my career where I would say, what did the person say? Well, I sit with them all the time. I speak to them every single day. It's totally different in a one-to-one environment where you're just talking about not the day-to-day, or take them out of the kind of environment that they're normally in to have that conversation, go for a walk, go sit in the pub, do something.
Yeah.
But when there becomes a situation, let's say, where an employee gets to the point of that they have resigned, and sometimes that comes as a shock. And, you know, I think as managers, we'd all love it if our people were totally transparent and honest to us all the time. And if I'm thinking about this, because not everyone does that. So sometimes you're in a situation where you have the shock, an employee resigns or very much indicates that they're looking for a new role.
Yeah.
What are your kind of tips and tricks then maybe for people handling that situation?
You know, when it's visible, it's probably too late, because there's that intention to quit before there's any action around it. You mentioned about sort of, you know, constant conversation. I think there is that. I love it in the airports where you've got the red, amber, green button you push as you go through security. You know, that's a constant pulse, really. So I think there was something around using all the tech that's available now to just pulse check how people are feeling. It is, how honest are people going to be? Well, if they've got a good manager and they've got a great relationship with their manager and the manager's dedicating time to really listen to them, then I think you may spot things. What else would you spot? You'd spot a tail off in performance might indicate you know, somebody whose motivation is dropping. And, you know, that comes back to then how well do you measure performance? How transparent is it? Colleagues, close colleagues as well, they'll spot probably. Now, you're not going to be, you know, pulling people into rooms and interrogating them. But, you know, you think about the times where you've worked with closely with people who are thinking about going, you know, yeah. They'll share it with you. You know, so is there a appropriate way that a colleague can raise a flag? You know, it's really creating a culture where, we're talking about culture later, but where there is that sort of comfort to really speak your mind.
So we've all worked with people where actually sometimes we may see it ahead of them in the fact that it might be a good idea for them to leave, i.e. they're disruptive to a team, or we can genuinely see they've outgrown where they are or where that company is at that point in its journey compared to where that individual is, or they're just not performing and actually they're a problem. And that could be underperforming in terms of actual delivery of role, but it also could be an attitude, because that can obviously be quite poisonous across the team. Any kind of advice you can give maybe of how you would encourage people to approach that subject, I guess, with said colleague to maybe help them exit smoothly and quickly?
I always see people, there's a couple of syndromes, I haven't named them, maybe we can name them together. But, you know, when people leave an organisation, initially it's, oh, that's a shame. And then month one, well, actually, we're not really missing them. Month two, they weren't very good. You know, and by month three, you know, there were people you really wanted to leave. That's not necessarily the case. So we can, you know, demonise those that leave. I think always, you know, we can demonise people, obviously, but I think look at these people as future advocates for your business, okay? And often people will come back. You know, the grass is not always greener, is it? It appears to be greener. So it's really having a very adult chat with them, you know, and, you know, what you're thinking about, and then helping them, really genuinely helping them. Now, it's up to you whether you would go as far as connecting them to a competitor. I don't know, but certainly use your networks or combine networks to try to help them move on.
You know, I heard a saying that the grass might look greener, but you still got to water it or something. Like, I was like, actually, that's quite interesting, because it kind of, that's how people feel. And I suppose, again, then it's sitting down with them, you know, and having the conversation about, I think going back to your point earlier about being a nice manager isn't always a good manager, is it? It's about, so what describes a good manager? Like, what are the characteristics that we all really need to be, like, up our game on to be the best we can be for our people?
Yeah, I think that there's the one I mentioned earlier about being clear is to be kind. So I think a lot of management development can focus on things that are predominantly trends, really. You know, and some of, you know, there's a lot of worthiness in those trends, but there's basics, really. You need to be able to comfortably direct people, but equally support them. This goes back to, you know, situational leadership type stuff. I think a lot of it is about dedicating time. I work with so many managers, and it was when I was working in EMI, the music people, somebody came with this phrase that their managers are in it, not on it. Okay. So you imagine how demotivating it is to have your one-to-one counseled with your manager, you know, because, and you're not going to voice how annoying that is. It's that one piece of time where you've got dedicated concentration and you can speak your mind. So, you know, you have to dedicate time to people. You have to make sure you've got that time, and that's about delegating. You've got to understand where people sit in terms of, and you won't if you're not spending time with them. Are they over-pressured, under-pressured? You know, people can be stressed by not having enough pressure. I've had in my career boring roles, and it's stressful. Yeah, and a job that's too stretching, stressful also. And it's not about being nice. Now, partly it's about really getting to know people whilst still being their manager. So it's not about, you want to understand whether their habits are real or, you know, what's going on at home. That might be. But always remember, you could end up performance managing that individual.
Yeah.
So genuine interest and really dedicating the time. And you won't dedicate the time if you're not, and it sounds obvious really, but if you're not delegating, you know, if you think about people you've seen, how much time do managers actually take managing their people? And just pedantic differentiation between management and leadership. You know, you manage things and processes, objectives, smart objectives, all that stuff. But leading is a real connection. and inspiring people and translating the vision so they can create their own visions to support it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes where I go wrong when I'm sat down talking to my team is I do too much of the talking and not enough of the listening. And I only do that because I want to empathize with them. So they'll say something and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I agree, you know, or whatever. And then, but actually, I think it's really important in that scenario, you kind of rein it back in, don't you? And actually just listen, like listen to the words they say, how they say it.
Yeah, yeah, and really watch them. I mean, you can say the same with interviews, you know, getting brilliant people on board. Mm-hmm. I've seen so many interviews where the interviewer is just talking about their company all the time or their role, or, you know, you've got to, yeah, listen. Was Dale Carnegie, a classic old sort of management theorist, said that you've got two ears and one mouth, use them in that proportion.
But how important are, I know we kind of covered it at the beginning of this podcast, but things like the smaller things, I suppose, that like are people getting to leave a bit early on their birthday, people like the environment, you know, that there's free tea and coffee for them, that, you know, some of these will go without saying in many businesses, but some of things are the smallest things, aren't they, that can make the biggest difference to how people feel.
My point would be it's different for different people.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I'll think about my great bosses, you know, the one who let me sleep under a table. He understood my life. He could see, probably because I couldn't even speak at one point because I was so tired. You know, he could see that's what I needed. Other people will value different things. There's I work with a tech company who are really flying, and their CTO was a passionate environmentalist, and they worked on a business park. They owned the business park. They were incredibly successful, and they sold off a bit of it, which included a lake, which was drained. He left. Yeah. He voiced his concern. They ignored it. He left, and he was a key player in that business. You know, expectations are raising all the time. So free tea and coffee, free drinks. On the whole, I think that's a given.
I was using it as, I suppose, as examples of like how people notice things, you know, now more than ever, I think, in terms of how businesses behave and what they do get and what they don't get and why would that be, and read into it a little bit more. Like you said, obviously different people want different things, and as individuals and as managers of people, we also have grown up in a, let's say, an operational environment or a project environment or a finance environment or a tech environment, whatever it might be, and therefore we might be a little bit more like those people, to be very, you know, putting everyone into a box, which I know isn't totally fair. So in small businesses where you haven't necessarily got access to a big HR resource or, you know, consultants, etc., how do people really work out what their people want?
Yeah, it's going to be that trite answer, which is listen, I think. I know that's obvious, but often it's the obvious stuff that isn't done when most managers, team leaders, people at your board level, senior levels like yourself are time poor, okay? You can, you know, Maslow, most people have heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and the classic is to motivate somebody at the wrong level. So, you know, if somebody's not, is behind with their rent, can't afford, you know, to get their kids what they want to get their kids, or even sometimes feed their kids properly, they're not going to be motivated by saying, stick in, you know, yeah, put your head down for 6 months and then you'll get the promotion. You know, the jam tomorrow argument is very weak, I think. So it's understanding where they are in their life, but actually just asking them the question. Yeah. Now, and you can't give everything to everybody, because actually, you don't forget, the purpose is to motivate them. I think good businesses understand that you want to motivate people so they perform better. It's not about being nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then perform better, the organization performs better, and then basically there's more money to then do things with people or support people.
Mm. So I suppose my final question then is, how do people manage, if that's the right word, the culture in a business? Because me and other people, I'm sure, have worked in a business where it started off quite small, and then over time it's grown and it's become bigger. And I think sometimes, you know, the culture, you know, your core values, you don't want to lose them. But at the same time, you have to adapt and you have to change, because everything's changing around you and you can't be there all the time, or you can't do the things that you used to do.
Culture is often a very ethereal thing. You know, if you had to describe the culture, let's go with it. Rather than answer your question, I'll ask you one. There you go. Classic consulting. So, how would you define the culture at some
family feel, corporate ambition, know everything about, not everything about everyone, know lots about people and treat them as individuals. But our kind of ethos is to exceed customers' expectations and do it cheerfully. So we would talk about that. That isn't just external customers, that's people within the business too.
Okay. So if you look at, there's this culture map or cultural web, it's called, and there's lots of things that sort of, you know, describe culture. So the stories that are told, rituals and routines. So I suspect you'll have some rituals or routines. Mm-hmm. That might be, you know, applauding the top performers. It might be what you do at Christmas or other, you know, other times of other festivals. There's symbols, you know, when you walk into your office, what does it look like? The structure, you know, how flat is it? I think yours is reasonably flat. You know, control systems, processes, all of this stuff combines to make the culture. I think it's quick answer, which is rare for me, is just clearly defining the culture and then using that, finding lots of opportunities to share that. Be that a part of appraisal processes. You can do things that focus on particular elements of that culture across the piece. So it's verbalizing the unspoken.
Yeah,
I'm trying to sound profound here. I'm just making it up, but verbalizing the unspoken and reminding people of it.
I think one of the things I struggled with personally is when we were in kind of lockdown, COVID times, we made a decision really early as a business that we were never going to return to the office all the time. And actually, it really worked for us to give people a bit of freedom at home, hybrid working. And we still maintain that to this day. We changed everyone's employment contracts really early on in that process, and it works. But I sometimes, you know, I miss the everybody together. I know we get more out of people and our business overall, and they get more out of us by not returning to that environment all the time. Yeah. But I miss it. And how any kind of tips or anything that you would give to people of how you still maintain values, culture, beliefs at a distance?
It's really interesting because I did some work years ago with Unilever, and they designed their head office, and this was probably 10 years ago, to be too small because they wanted to start people working from home more. And they came up with this lovely phrase, which was work is an activity, not a place. Okay, so they intentionally did that. And some of the stuff, and this might not answer your question, but some of the stuff that they focused on was, you know, managers, how can I manage somebody if they're not in the office?
Yeah.
Well, how do you manage them now? You know, and if they've got clear objectives, then they're even more important if they're working virtually. Otherwise, you end up with presenteeism, you know, the sort of rewarding people who come in on time and who you like almost rather than what they do, what they deliver. So measuring performance is important to continue that work going. I think having worked through lockdown with some London-based businesses, it's not always what people want.
Yeah.
So the risk is you can sort of, if you imagine you're desperate not to lose your partner.
Mm-hmm.
I've met James. I wouldn't want to lose him afterwards. Yeah. Lose
That's
him
what
either.
Day it is. But yeah, no,
well,
I'll
right,
go
well,
with
come
it.
Come on. Come on. Leave him alone. You know, if you think of about the behaviours of a desperate partner not wanting to lose a partner, that can be sort of almost too needy and too smothering.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a balance. Certain personalities, and you're one of those, need people around them.
Yeah.
Other people are very comfortable to work independently.
Yeah, and I definitely think for our team, I'm more than happy with the balance right now, because actually we have people coming in, you know, without being asked. Some people choose to work in the office all the time. We typically have certain days of the week where most people are in, because actually everyone feels like a big team together. And it's just naturally worked, which has kind of been brilliant. But we do run incentives and different things on particular days, which definitely, you know, if there's pizza up for grabs or something, we usually see a high number of people in the office.
Yeah, my word. Where will these people come from?
Yeah. Right. I think we could talk all day. I find it such a fascinating subject about people, and there's so many other things to say. I'm sure we'll end up doing another podcast in the future. But a massive thank you to you, Andrew. I think that's been a great session.
I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good. Before you go, our regular listeners of Let's Talk Let's will know that we always end every podcast by asking our guests for a funny story or anecdote.
Okay. So I've sort of edited these out.
But, okay.
Yeah, I'll share what
other guests have not.
I started out in this engineering company, John Brown Engineers, and part of my job, even though when I left school, I was the last year not to do computing at school, I ended up, they didn't interview me rigorously, being responsible for maintaining the computer network as part of my role. Okay, I didn't really know what I was doing, but there was a clever IT guy who helped me. And it was a WANG network, there you go. And I was working for the marketing director, and we had a managing director, I won't name, but he was a very blunt guy. And it was quite scary, really, to me as a sort of 21-year-old, scared the life out of me. Yeah. I worked for this lovely guy called Neville. And sometimes to fix the WANG network, the motherboard sat under his desk, okay?
Right.
And I had to get under his desk, take the computer out and clean the motherboard with an ink rubber. Those were the days, eh? I don't think technology's moved on. So I was under there, under Neville's desk. He was sat working away on top of the desk. And then the MD came in. Okay, so Neville gave me this hand movement on the desk, which is basically stay there, keep quiet. 40 minutes. I was under his desk for 40 minutes. It was covered at the front, so I was, you know, sat there. I moved around very carefully because I was starting to get cramp. So, yeah, I was under his desk for 40 minutes so that I didn't emerge from being under his desk, which would probably have been an interesting discussion.
Definitely. You've moved on.
And I'm 6'2", so it wasn't a lot of space.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you. So as well as our podcasts, the Lettings Hub has also created ebooks for our letting agent customers on a whole range of subjects. And actually, this week we have one being released on the art of inspiring a team. So very topical based on what we've been talking about today. Please make sure you look at the Lettings Hub LinkedIn page, which will contain a link to the ebook in the next day or two, and ensure that you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Lets. Please make sure you follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we're always open to feedback. We'd love to hear what you think. And we'd love to hear what topics or guests you would love to hear from in the future. Thanks for listening and see you next week.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.